Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Time for This Week in Chicago History with Anna DeVlantis. Good morning, Anna. Let's start with 1981.
1981, Bob. Good morning. The news broke that the Chicago Cubs would no longer be part of the Wrigley family and that the Tribune had cut a deal to buy them for the grand total of, wait for it, $20 million.
Yeah, pretty good buy. It was quite a surprise, wasn't it?
It really was. You know, there have been rumors of it happening over the years, constant rumors. Are they going to sell the Cubs? Would you sell the Cubs? And the Wrigley family got so sick of answering it. But this one, when it actually did happen, when that deal with the Tribune was cut, it was a surprise. They were losing $2 million a year. They weren't just losing games. They were losing money as well. And the decision was made to sell them, and the Tribune wanted to buy them. Here's our good friend Walter Jacobson, along with sportscaster Johnny Morris, breaking the news from the Channel 2 news desk.
For the first time in recent history, the Chicago Cubs are about to not belong to the Wrigley family. The team is about to be owned by the Chicago Tribune. Good evening. The surprise sale of the Chicago Cubs would shift ownership of the Cubs to the Tribune Company for about $20 million. Here's Johnny with details.
Yes, Walter, you paraphrased it well. William Wrigley has sold his Chicago Cubs to the Chicago Tribune. The purchase price, $20.5 million. Wrigley owned 81% of the club. The sale is subject to approval by the National League and the Cub Board of Directors. It appears that that will be only a formality. So the Chicago Cubs, which have been a part of the Wrigley family since 1916, will become a segment of the Tribune conglomerate. Bill Wrigley's grandfather bought the team, which had some reasonable success in the early days, pennants in 29, 32, 35, and 38, but never a World Series. P.K. Wrigley gradually allowed the team to disintegrate as the Cubs failed to change with the times in the free agent modern times of modern baseball.
$20 million in 81. Andy, what are they worth, do you think, today?
In the billion range, probably.
Wow.
Yeah. Didn't I just hear in the news the Broncos are being valued at $5
billion? $4.65 billion.
Inflation. This is an historic week in Blackhawks history, too, isn't it?
God, I just love this memory, Bob. I mean, think back to this. 2010, when the Chicago Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup, ending a 49-year championship drought, the city just went wild at the time. I remember the parades, and I had the parade, and everyone came out for it. It was such a joyous time for our city, and I still get chills when I think about the final moments of that final game. Andy will remember this well. It went into overtime. It was game six. Patrick Kane had the puck, and he made this magical game-winning shot. It just snuck into the far side of the net, and no one, it seemed, on the ice other than Patrick Kane knew that he had scored the game-winning shot. Patrick Kane was celebrating. His teammates weren't right away. Coach Q didn't. The fans didn't know what to do. It was this delayed response because of how silky that shot was. And Patrick Kane was so happy they're trying to figure it out. Here's the call from John Wiedemann and Troy Murray. 2010 Blackhawks Flyers, Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Finals.
Puck taken back by Campbell, left point. Drops it to Kane on the left half boards. Here's Kane now, juking his way to the right, lower left corner. Should he score? Oh, no, that's turned wide by Layton. Loose puck in the crease. And now it's in the net. They score!
It's in!
The Hawks win the Stanley Cup! The Hawks win the Stanley Cup! Layton is down on his knees in the goal crease. And that one looked like it slid past him into the net. They're going to go and take a look. Look upstairs, but everybody on the ice, nobody knew where the puck was. Layton froze in the goal crease. Let's see what
it's
have
in the
here.
Back of the net.
It's in the back of the net. The Hawks have won the Stanley Cup. Blackhawks fans around the world, you've endured 49 years of frustration, but your patience has finally paid off. Yeah. Lord Stanley's new address is Sweet Home Chicago.
I forgot the confusion.
I watched that over and over, and I still cannot see even on slow-mo how it made it into the net. It's just incredible. Such a cool moment.
Yeah, it seems like just yesterday, and also seems like so long ago now, 2010. The Bulls also had some celebrating this week in 1991.
Yeah, this is when it all began, Bob. You know, a lot of attention to the Bulls' last championship with the success of that Netflix series, The Last Dance. But we want to take you back this morning to remember the very first NBA championship for the Bulls. First one for Jordan, first one for the franchise. We didn't know it then, Bob, of course, but it was they'd be a sports dynasty in the making, that's what was going on before our eyes. But this will take you back to that first sweet victory, 1991, and a young, emotional Michael Jordan in the post-game interview, too.
Pippen comes away with it, and the Chicago Bulls have won their first ever NBA championship. The Bulls, greeted by a portion of this crowd as they try to get back to their locker room. For the Lakers, a different story.
Michael, what does it mean to you?
It means so much. I mean, not just for me, but for the team and for the whole city. It's been a seven-year struggle. I mean, when I first got into Chicago, we started at the bottom. And every year, we just worked harder and harder until we got to it.
Is there a sense of completeness and fulfillment for you now that might not have been there for all your other achievements before?
Well, I wanted to get here. If I never got here, I would never have been disappointed about my career. But, you know, it caps it off. You know, it means a lot to me. It means a lot to the city. I'm just happy that I was able to be a part of history in the city of Chicago.
1991.
Yeah, I think we have a bonus cut, too, because so many of the Bulls' victories, of course, happened about this week. History-making moments, their second championship, their first three-peat was also this week. And I think producer Joe pulled us a bonus cut of the Chicago Bulls' first three-peat this week in 1992.
Max waving for B.J. to come back, and Michael flips it in to B.J., back to Michael. Michael, 11 seconds. Across the timeline he comes, goes to Pippen. Pippen runs down the lane, dumps it out to Horace. Paxson for three.
Yeah! Yeah! Hits the three. 3:09:10 left. And the Bulls lead 99-98.
Actually, 1993. Yeah, how about those Bulls and Blackhawks memories? That's all we've got to work with for a while, the memories.
That's what we've got, Bob. I love it.
It's our This Week in Chicago History feature with Anna DeVlantis, and now we go back to 1973.
This is my favorite one, and I just love this clip. This week marks a major moment in local broadcast history involving you, Bob.
Uh-oh.
A young broadcaster named Bob Surratt debuted as a DJ on Chicago radio this week. This was the week you took to the airwaves with your very first show. Do you remember it?
Yeah, actually, I was working at BBM FM for a couple of years, but then moved over to AM so I could afford an FM in my car. And it was actually on this date, June 8, 1973, that I started on the 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. shift.
Yeah. You were doing the overnights.
Well, it wasn't quite. Actually, Yvonne Daniels was on from 2 a.m. on, but I was on from 10 p.m. to 2 in the morning for 2 months, and then moved to the afternoon for all those years. You know?
Well, you'll be happy to know, Bob, we found your very first show in the Deep Archives.
Not happy about
and
that.
And we have some of it to play for you this morning. Let's hear it here.
All right.
Bob Surratt, look at this. 11 minutes, and I still haven't made a mistake. I didn't do this well on FM. Doobie Brothers. And Bob Surratt, it's 10:16. Great day today. A lot of sunburn going around tonight from the day we had. It looks like more in store for the weekend. Chicago weather, partly cloudy and a little cooler tonight. Mostly sunny and warm tomorrow. Sunny and warm on Sunday. Tonight's low 65. Tomorrow's high 85. Take the top down, even if it's a hard top. A little messy, but nice. Sunday's high 89. The official Chicago temperature 77.
Yeah, I know. After I did that, the next day, my parents, who were used to listening to me in the morning on Stereo 96, said, "Well, we could barely hear you. What was all that noise and echo, and you hardly spoke? What was going on there?" Anyway,
the enunciation was incredible, though. Wow.
Oh yeah,
77. I'm like, really?
Yeah. Fortunately, when I moved to the afternoon opposite Larry Lujack, there was a lot of publicity about that, and everything seemed to go well after that, despite my first show.
Legendary career in broadcasting started this week in 73.
I'm not a legend. I'm a myth. Now let's go to 2001, and everybody was up in arms about Soldier Field, weren't they?
Yeah. You know, it was interesting, because 2001, the major renovation plans were finally unveiled. They were, hey, we're going to redo Soldier Field, and we figured out a way to keep its old-world charm and bring in the new Time Stadium, you know, that whole thing. And it was universally slammed. I went back and looked. Every major media outlet in town, even out of town, the Tribune at the time called the plans grotesquery along the lakefront. People just, I mean, they looked at it and they're like, well, why are we landing a spaceship in the middle of Soldier Field? It was not well received. And I pulled some cool audio here I think you'll appreciate, Bob. This is the lead construction guy, the project manager, who I think they trotted out there for all the media, the local TV stations to say, you know, like, don't worry about what it looks like on the outside. Take a look at the inside. That's what matters.
People love the inside of the stadium, even those that aren't sure what they think of the outside yet. And again, it's a change and people are going to need to get used to it. But once they get inside and they see how intimate the venue is and how close they are to the action, the average seat here is going to be at least 50 feet closer than the old stadium. And the reason is we're building a modern stadium inside of old Soldier Field.
This is why I never liked the State of Illinois building. It looks like it doesn't belong in the middle of all those iconic historic structures, and that was the problem, and still is, I think, with the spaceship look of Soldier Field.
It really stands out like it doesn't belong, and it cost $660 million to do it. They lost seats in the process; 5,000 seats were taken away. So you know, you didn't even get it up to Super Bowl status where you could even try for that. But then they did create more suites and the kinds of boxes that get the real income for the stadium. So they accomplished that.
Yeah, and now it's Arlington Heights. Here we come.
That's what it seems like.
Thanks, Anna. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, Bob.